I get this all the time. Anisha, I got 40 brand deals. What can you do for me? I'm like, I'm going to get you four big ones. I'm going to cut 36 of them. I'm going to charge more to the four that actually want to work with you. And you're going to thank me 10 times over.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise the glass. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. This is Jonathan Gandolf, founder and CEO of The Juice, and today's host for a fresh episode of the Content Cocktail Hour. I am thrilled to be joined by Anish Lal, founder of the Wishly Group. Anish and I crossed paths several times at several different events out in market. Got to meet some of his roster, which we'll dive into later. And just really fun guy to learn from and to watch kind of start the Wishly Group and see some of the success they're having. We will get into all of that. Anish, before I ramble for too long, though, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about the Wishly Group?
First of all, I appreciate being on the show. Big fan of what you're all working on and so pumped to be one of your partners. On my end, this whole journey with this whole talent agency type of thing on LinkedIn started last year. I was working with one creator before then for just a little bit. KD is the one who got me into the game. But when you start talking to all these creators on LinkedIn, you realize like, they're getting approached for all these deals. And you know, a lot of them don't know how to package up what they already have or what to charge or what deliverables are fair and all those types of things. So I didn't realize how much of an opportunity it was until people started asking KD, hey, how are you doing this, this and that? You know, all these creators, especially sales and marketing folks, they talk. One thing led to another. I think we went from two creators in January to 25 in December 2024. And we've got another 20 on the wait list. So super excited to be here. I used to work at Pinterest back in the day, my media sales background. And I took all that enterprise media knowledge and I think I've brought it here to LinkedIn, which has been really interesting for me.
I'm excited to dig into that, all of that a little bit, even selfishly. I think there's some Pinterest and the Juice parallels. Just, yeah, I'm excited to learn from you in this conversation. I'm fascinated by it all. Before we do all that though, this is the Content Cocktail Hour. Anish, we always ask our guests, what are you enjoying drinking nowadays?
Anytime there's a win coming in, I'll crack open a nice bottle of the Lagavulin 16. That's my go-to right now. On a regular day, you know, you get catch me with Tito's and soda, trying to wash the waistline a bit. And then wife and I've had a few chats about let's get healthier this year. So just good old water. Those are my big three right now, man. Hopefully I can crack open the Lagavulin 16 a bit more this year. That'd be nice.
That's a good balance. Yeah, I too am trying to drink more water. Celebrating when you can, for sure. So you mentioned you started with KD, Kevin Dorsey, for those who maybe live under a rock and don't know who that is. So I'm so curious, maybe tell us a little bit about how that came to be. And then when did you realize like there's a much bigger opportunity that's its own standalone business beyond just the partnership with KD?
So KD and I started working together probably 2021, 2022. So we're trying to figure out the day we actually spoke, but I helped build up this community called Rev Genius. That was sort of my foray into this whole LinkedIn space. I was the first head of community there. I was part of the journey from zero to 7,000. It was like this big thing that blew up right when COVID hit. And I just got more involved with the LinkedIn community at that point. And I think people started hearing my name a bit more because of Rev Genius. So then I remember joining KD's Patreon group. He had his own paid community. And I'm a big fan of KD. I've been following him for years and studying what he writes. And it's helped me out in my own career like as a seller. I owe him a lot. Let's put it that way. So I got there and I was like, hey, man, just so you know, there's a couple things with your community that you probably need to, you know, I give him some feedback. And he's like, dude, do you want to just come do this with me? I was like, yeah, I'd love to work with you. Like, it was not even a money thing. I was like, shit, I get to work with KD. This is fantastic. So I get there and I think my reputation at that time was just like, you're a community guy and nothing wrong with that. But I'm working full time, you know, as a media salesperson working with like enterprise multi-billion dollar brands. And I told KD this after like, a, you know, a couple months. I'm like, you know, if you just like bundle up your podcast, your newsletter and your LinkedIn and we built like a media kit. And he's like, what now? That's where it started. I worked his first brand deal. I've worked every other deal since, and it was just supposed to be something that just to help him out with. And then he's just like, you're really good at this. Do you just want to own this for me? I'm like, yeah, sure, man. And you know, he's like, I'll pay you this. Great. Got my 20%. And one thing led to another. And here we are.
Yeah. Just kind of follow the opportunity, right? Like kind of emerges and then becomes very real. So now you're at, I think, nearly 20 creators, you said, with a wait list. You know, it's good business if you're turning away business. Are there any trends you've seen, or like how are you seeing the space evolve as you've gone from 1 to 20?
So the goal here for us is to bring in like a diverse group of creators. So we have a lot of sales influencers. We have a lot of marketing influencers now. We're building up that side. RevOps is probably the most underrepresented group that I have up. You know, so if you're a RevOps creator and you want a talent rep, let me know. And then I've started looking at new groups as well, like HR, career progression, productivity. Those categories are, from a trends perspective, they're the longest sales cycle, most difficult to sell, because those audiences are for job hunters. And there's not a lot of brands that are making big money on job hunting type of audiences. So unless you're like a resume building, career coaching type of brand, that category is tougher to do deals with. The sales tech and MarTech spaces, though, are very lucrative. These brands make great margin, lots of seats to be sold for a lot of the software. So those ones have been more lucrative for a lot of my creators in the sales, marketing, and RevOps space.
That's a great segue. So let's shift into how kind of brands should think about partnering with the creators of the Wishly group. Maybe just walk us through like the anatomy of what that typically looks like, and then I'm sure some follow-up questions from there.
So just for context for anyone listening, we're doing about $200,000 a month in creator spend or influencer spend now. And that's just for 13 of my creators. The other 12 we just brought on board and they're in onboarding mode. So just imagine where this thing can go. We have a 90% renewal rate with all the brands that work with us from pilot to extension. So the playbook I'm about to share with everybody, it works. Okay. Unless I found a way to trick 90% all these different people, I don't know, but like, these folks are very, very savvy marketers who have renewed with us several times. So most of the times when I see a LinkedIn campaign starting off and brands want to start, they'll do like a promoted post type of thing, like one or two promoted posts. And I genuinely don't believe that that works all the time. You need to have a very correct execution with that. I think if anyone's coming close to getting that right, I'd say Vin Metano at Creator Buzz has done a really good job there. But for some of the more strategic partnerships with some of the bigger creators, where I see a lot of where our playbook really goes is multi-channel, multi-month activations. This means you're not just doing like a one-off post or anything like that. You're looking to really get integrated with somebody's audience. So take a Devin Reed or a John Barrows, for example. Like, they have different channels to activate against. They got LinkedIn. They have newsletters. They have podcasts. They have so many other things they can do. On top of that, all of our creators, at least, are extremely talented. They'll get on video. They'll get on webinars. We'll do co-authored assets like lead magnets and things of that nature. There's a lot of cool things there that when you bundle those things up over 3 months, you get a lot of data in a pilot. Is the newsletter thing working? Is the podcast thing working? Is this working? And we take that data and we just double down to, you know, longer contracts, because usually something is working when we test those many things. So that's how we've been working with brands. It gets them a lot deeper with audiences, and it allows your subject matter expert, your creator, to get really involved and ingrained with the brand. The amount of time somebody will sit down with a KD and John and be like, what's your product feedback? And after 3 months of just talking about this thing, they have a lot more to take back to you. So that's the strategy and approach I would take if I was a brand coming into LinkedIn.
So you mentioned the 90% renewal rate and this great data. Why is it so successful? How are brands measuring success? Like, is it pure return in terms of revenue, or how should a brand measure success of a kind of influencer partnership?
It's all of the above, right? So a lot of these brands will come in to start with awareness with us. Then they'll go into like some form of consideration. And if they can see conversion in the first 3 months, it's a win across the board. Influencer marketing is one of those long-term plays. Like any community-led strategy, people need time to warm up to why is it that so-and-so is endorsing you? What problems are you actually solving for? Like, yes, I've heard your name, but like, when do I consider you in my buyer journey? Those things take time to build authentically, especially with how noisy things are in our market. Even in my sales process, like, this is the types of things I look for in our champion. They have to understand that piece. So once that part's down in terms of how they see results, obviously, we do the top of funnel basic stuff, engagement, that's fine. But a big part of our offering is like, let's say you're brand X and you have an ABM list or a persona list. We can marry that list to our creators' first degree connections. And those are the people that we invite to the webinars. We can help identify who those folks are in our newsletters. We can even, with Clay Tables now, Clay's one of our partners, by the way, shout out Clay. We can even tell you anyone who's liked and engaged with your posts and put them into a Clay Table and enrich that to say, this is the company they're from. This is the position they're in. And then if you have a 30 to 60 day look back window as a company, how many of those companies now that liked someone's post are in your pipeline? Things aren't what they used to be with influencer marketing. We have a lot of cool ways to connect you with your audience.
Yeah, it seems like such a cool time of like the emerging kind of creator space, as well as like some of the emerging technology with AI and the Clay Tables. We're big fans as well. Like just kind of the marrying of all that together. Kudos to you for taking advantage of it all.
We got lucky, like being in the sales and marketing technology, like these are the folks who are also our customers. I remember working with Bruno before the team was even hired. Like it was just me, him, and like we brought on John Barrows. And now they have a whole team of folks that we work with on the influencer side. So just to see like the growth and evolution, we get to see the technology before anybody else. And I was like, holy smokes, we can use this for measurement. I can answer the number one question.
I don't know if you know Upfluence at all. They're a partner of ours. They're like a creator platform, more on the tech side. They don't own the actual creator relationship. But we were talking a lot about like balancing, you know, we as marketers, I can say this as a former marketer, we've got like perfect messaging and perfect copy, we think, for a campaign. And then we hand it to a creator and, you know, it's not authentic to the creator's voice or to their audience, right? How do you balance, like, for customers of yours who want to work with your creators, what's the balance between creative freedom for the creator versus like the messaging from the brand?
This is all part of our managing expectations and a sales process. Like we tell them ahead of time, there's a whole due diligence phase before we even sign the contract. So the creator has to have used the product or service before promoting it. And if they haven't, there's a very intense demo and positioning phase. So what ends up happening as a result, regardless of any of those two things, the creator has to tell me what are the story arcs they believe will resonate with their audience on behalf of the brand. We then take those story arcs and share them with the brand to make sure the brand is aligned. And if the brand is not aligned to the story arcs or how the creator is planning to position, we scrap the deal to begin with. So we don't wait till launch day to figure that one out. That's a bad practice. For us, it's like, here's why the creator is excited about your product, software, offer, and how it's going to solve problem X, Y, or Z. Are you okay with that person, brand, or whatever? And then 9 times out of 10, the brand's like, holy smokes, this, we didn't even realize Talk Tracks 2 and 3 existed. Wow. And we haven't even signed the papers yet. That's the piece where it comes down to management, managing expectations ahead of the game, instead of being like, we'll see what happens. And then the creator's not on board or the brand's not on board.
The like feedback loop in and of itself is incredibly valuable from that perspective. Like I'm sure that's not why brands are doing the partnerships, but to receive that along the way is really valuable, really beneficial, I would imagine.
And we also have a campaign strategist who's there for every step of the journey. So it's like, yes, we have our story arcs, but what are some fun, creative ways to bring that story arc to life? We don't leave that with the brand or the creator. We like to help guide that a bit more. Just the best practice we've picked up on is because a lot of these brands haven't done creator campaigns yet. Like, why would we just tell you, cool, thanks for signing. All right, okay, this is what John likes, go. So I think having the campaign strategy there is really helpful.
Last question, then I want to switch perspectives a little bit, but you mentioned often this is the first creator campaign that a brand has done with your roster. What would you say to somebody who is either trying to convince their business to adopt this creator-led marketing strategy or more personality into their brand? Like, how do they create the business case internally to get their business to buy into this path?
Well, luckily now we have a lot of case studies that we can share. So it's like, hey, look at what they did in this category with just someone who may not even have as much brand equity as us. They'll do that. But realistically, like we have all the audience analytics. So if you tell me you're going after a certain persona, I will show you in the audience data of creator X, like, wow, there's a 20% overlap with that audience. You should probably tap into this, right? So that helps get across the finish line for like a CFO type of thing, like see the numbers and the data. Vision casting is, that one's actually been easier on us because like for some reason, B2B influencer marketing is all the rage right now. So we are sort of riding those coattails a little bit. I'm not going to lie. So that's been helpful too.
Yeah, why not? Ride the wave.
It's the time to do it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so let's switch then to maybe like a creator or an individual personality who maybe they've organically built a following, or they've built a following through their corporate brand or whatever it may be. From that perspective, like what should somebody be thinking about if they're either considering making the leap to being a solopreneur and kind of a one-person influencer, or maybe they're doing it on the side? Like, what have you learned along the way from the creator perspective?
I'd say that tipping point to go full-time creator, if you ever want to make that leap, the only time you should be even remotely considering that is if you're saying no to more deals than yes because of where you work. So there's a lot of places that, you know, if I worked at ZoomInfo, for example, there's a lot of categories that I probably could not endorse because of what ZoomInfo does. And you can do that for any brand. So the moment you hit that tipping point where you're getting so many inbound requests of like, hey, so-and-so, we want to work with you on this email marketing or signals or whatever campaign, say, ah, shit, my legal team won't approve that. I'll probably get fired. I have these conversations every day. I actually tell more creators just, you only had two requests come in this month, like chill out, right? Say no to the two, focus on your W-2 until you're getting this too much to the point where you're like, hey, hang on now. I could be making the same amount of money to make 6 posts in a month than working 40 hours a week. That's a conversation we should have. But until you hit that tipping point, not worth it.
I have to imagine there's a lot of people out there who they're working towards this as a goal, as like becoming an influencer or a creator. Like, is that the right way to go about it? I don't know. That feels almost like it's so noisy right now. Like, that feels like a really uphill battle versus it happening organically.
There's two things to consider. One, it always looks sexy, but it's like a lot of work. All 25 creators I work with, we have 3 revenue lines for them, not just brand deals. We're helping them launch communities. We're helping them build digital products. We're helping them with their consulting business. It's not just brand deals. So if you're coming in thinking, I'm going to be so sick and make 4 videos and be a baller, it is not like that. The second thing is, because of this influx that we're talking about, overall, the price per activation is going down. That's why the multi-channel thing sort of protects them. But overall, if you're a pay-per-post player and that's all you're doing, please know within 2 years, this number is only going to go down if that's all you do. So you got to think about the economics and the unit economics behind it. This is not something to take lightly.
The different revenue lines, I think, is really interesting. Even just using that structure shows that there's a level of intentionality that comes with this that isn't just like pay per post and we'll see what happens, right? And you mentioned it in the results that you're finding for folks, the work you're doing ahead of time. I think like that shows like the legitimacy and the complexity that goes into all of this is very real.
And people need to think about it as a business, not just, you know, like, everyone wants to be a YouTuber, TikToker, LinkedIn person. It's just, you need to think about the business behind, okay, what happens if you don't get the brand deal this month? Like, are you like, maybe we double down on consulting or whatever it is. So just something to think about.
It's fascinating. You mentioned the B2B influencer kind of wave we're all riding right now. Is it a bubble? Is it here to stay? Is it going to get bigger? Is it going to plateau? Where are you kind of seeing the space going in the next 3 to 5 years?
The good news for LinkedIn in particular is that we're very nascent. Like, I used to work at Pinterest and some of these other companies, so I've gotten to see the other cycles. Like, a lot of my close friends work at Meta, Google, all these companies. Some of my mentors and the advisors of Wishly are managing directors at some of these bigger companies. And it just gets to a point where it's like, we're so behind compared to where Instagram influencers are that there's so much room for us to grow as a category. The D2C brands aren't even here yet, or they're slowly getting here. Like, I tell everybody, I'm like, why hasn't United Airlines and Bonvoy come to the traveling sales? Where's the work from home pet thing with Chewy or PetSmart for the dog, for pets? Those guys aren't even here yet. So I know we have a whole multi-billions of dollars about to enter into this space over a, you know, extended period of time. We're not even there yet. I think it's an exciting time for LinkedIn.
I think you're exactly right. Yeah, that's I think about that with Delta a lot. I always fly Delta, but like,
well, sorry,
I don't know. This sounds like a bougie ass thing to say out loud. But,
imagine someone from United heard this and is like, hang on, Delta's not here. What if United could convert you right now?
Well, it's like I I've done this in almost every career stop, no matter the airline. Like, my airline profile is always tied to my work email because it, probably 80-20% of my air travel is for work versus personal, right? And so I'm always just like tying that to my corporate account, wherever that's at. And like, you're exactly right. There's all sorts of things like that, you know, work from home. I think that's another great example. even like health, right? Like
there's so many categories that have not even, all we've done so far is like B2B sales, MarTech, RevOps. If you look at our bubble here and then you're in our listeners here today, like that's a very small bubble compared to the groups and categories out there who their preconceived notion of LinkedIn is, oh, these guys are just job hunters. Like nobody has money there anymore. That was 5-6 years ago. Now we have the keeners on LinkedIn, the people at the front be like, how do I get better at marketing? How do I get better at my craft? And those are the top earners at the companies they work for. Now it makes sense for these D2C brands to come in because the discretionary income is here.
I'm excited for you. That's really cool. Exciting opportunity. Well, yeah, Anish, we always, in these conversations, we put you on the hot spot. What's an unpopular opinion that you have as it pertains to B2B sales or marketing?
I believe that creators should take on no more than 3, maybe 4 strategic brand deals at a time. A lot of people out there will be like, oh, I have 60 brand deals. I'm like, that's terrible. That means nobody renewed with you. Or you're just going crazy and your audience is like overwhelmed with 60 sponsored posts. So that's not a good thing. So my hot take here is that if you're a creator and you've taken on more than 10, 15 brand deals, something is wrong. You don't have the retention or line of sight on the brands. You're not building long-term enough partnerships and your audiences will, you will feel that in the long term. You might make some money in 6 months, but then everyone's going to see you as a walking billboard. Be strategic, say no to things, less is more.
It's just like marketing, right? If you spread yourself thin across every single channel, you're going to not perform well. But if you know where it works and you can double down on one or two channels, then stack your chips there.
I get this all the time. Anish, I got 40 brand deals. What can you do for me? I'm like, I'm going to get you 4 big ones. I'm going to cut 36 of them. I'm going to charge more to the 4 that actually want to work with you. And you're going to thank me 10 times over, right? So that's sort of our model. It's been working really well for a lot of our creators. So that's sort of my hot take.
Hey, all right. One other hot topic while we're on it. I meant to ask this earlier and it escaped me, but we're recording this a few days after Notion ran a LinkedIn campaign of a lot of updated profiles with a Notion doodle. I forget exactly what they called it, but it landed on my radar because people were complaining about whether or not people were saying it was actually an ad or not when they did it. Where do you fall? Because I've seen this debate previously. Where do you fall on like creators kind of blatantly, explicitly saying this is a paid sponsorship or paid ad versus not?
So I was part of that campaign.
Okay. I didn't realize that. All right.
I will defend this all day. First of all, Notion's one of the best partners we work with. They had 50 plus folks, including Snoop Dogg, by the way, on the campaign. And we were mandated to supply at least 10 of those 50. So we're a decent part of the campaign. So what I will say is the fact that we're talking about it right here is good for Notion. Notion's fiscal starts in February, not January. So for them, this is their end of year bang. Because in February, people are going to continue the conversation from exactly what we're doing right now. Notion's launched a whole bunch of AI features and they're in a pretty noisy competitive environment with all the other players out there. So for Notion to have all these people talking about Notion at the start of a new business fiscal, folks, it's brilliant. Everyone's like, well, this thing doesn't tell you what Notion does. I'm like, how many of you are actually going to go look into Notion now? Like it's coming next. It's a part of a master plan. I'm sure it is. Nothing but respect for the Notion team. I love being part of this campaign 100%.
You're right. We're talking about it. There's not many other campaigns I'm going to organically bring up.
How many other project management tools are we talking about like this, right? It's just not happening right now.
Marketing's an intention game at the end of the day. It's an intention and audience game, and they tapped into both. So good for them.
Yeah. And nobody knows what the next steps are. It's coming. Yeah. And it's going to be amazing. So I'm really excited for it.
Love it. Well, Anish, if people want to learn more from you, about you, or learn more about the Wishly Group, what's the best way to do it?
It's a little thing called LinkedIn. I have to stay true to the category. And just in case people haven't heard yet, I am about to drop a newsletter. We're going to start next week, actually, on the week of the 20th. It's called Influence. It's a LinkedIn newsletter. We'll send out the links and everything. We'll make sure it's all there. But I'll be putting out all the stories, kind of like what we just talked about today in bite-sized form, so people can just learn more about the category.
Love that. I can't wait to subscribe. Anish, thank you so much for joining us today. Until next time. Cheers.
Appreciate it. Bye.
Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources,
curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.